All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, my guest is Bon Posma, and he is the owner of a privately held company called Saninco Technologies. They make electric traction and propulsion drives that are mainly used in the coal mining industry, as well as hydrogen fuel cell drives for buses. And one of his drives holds the land speed record for an electric vehicle at 320 miles per hour. That was done on the Bonneville Salt Flats. And one of his interests is a company called Liquid Coal, LLC. He was graduated from the University of Western Ontario in science and physics and is now the go-to guy in the new fuels propulsion industry. And Mr. Pazza, thank you so much for sharing your valuable time with us and with our listeners. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, now I can.
Yes, I'm. Thank you, G. Gordon. I'm delighted to be on your show.
Okay. Yeah. You know, we had a letter from a listener which prompted us to call you. It says, G-Man, could you address the pros and cons of liquid coal to bring down our gas prices? Well, there's a number of things I'd like to talk to you about. That certainly is one of them. There are a number of processes. I guess the one that people are most familiar with is the one invented by the Germans during the Second World War. Germany has great coal reserves, just as we have great coal reserves. And I would certainly think that at $100 and up a barrel for crude, that it would be economically feasible. What say you, sir?
Well, at one time, several years ago, it was estimated that a price of $40 per barrel would make it economical to look at liquefying coal. So certainly, at the price level that we have right now, it certainly would be economical. But the biggest problem is the so-called environmentalists, what I call the foes of the earth. They unfortunately exaggerate the problems that exist with liquefied coal, and there are problems, but they exaggerate the problems, and they're a bit devious about how they represent the problems. And one of the processes that you mentioned earlier, the German process, is the Fischer-Tropsch process, invented in 1923 by two Germans, Fischer and Franz Tropsch. And in addition to that, there was another process invented by Bergius, the Bergius process. And those two processes produced about 90% of the fuel that the the Wehrmacht and the German forces used towards the end of the war.
Well, that being the case, I mean, I know that it releases CO2 into the air, but I mean, I haven't bought the Kool-Aid and drunk the Kool-Aid on that CO2 business. There's such a tiny amount of it in our atmosphere.
Yes.
And I really don't think that it has any measurable effect at all. But other than the fact that the greenie weenies are against it, why aren't we doing this? I would think that instead of burning up our agricultural crops and doubling the price of corn and wheat and everything else, why in the world aren't we doing this, using this immense coal reserves that we have to turn it into fuel?
You know, I've been to Washington over the last few years trying to talk to the energy advisors, the various people that produce our laws. And I sometimes feel, and I won't mention any names, but I sometimes feel that these guys that are dropouts from prison guard school, and if you can't be a prison guard, you become an energy advisor to some senators over here.
Folks, just so you'll understand it, the lowest tier of law enforcement is a prison guard. That most of them couldn't make it as low-speed yo-yo operators, but that's all right.
So unfortunately, these folks are ill-advised. Of course, if you're a legislator, you don't have time to look into all these details yourself, so you are dependent on your advisors. But right now, the one successful process to liquefy coal is used in South Africa by Sasol. and that is the Fischer-Tropsch process.
Mm-hmm.
And at Secunda in South Africa, they produce about 150,000 barrels of fuel per day. And in South Africa, all the diesel vehicles use South African diesel fuel derived from coal using the Fischer-Tropsch process. Now, I have a problem with the Fischer-Tropsch process because for every ton of coal that you liquefy, you burn a ton of coal. And it seems to be very, very wasteful.
Yeah, well, it is, except when we've got about 500 years worth of coal here in the United States.
And of course, the coal, when you burn coal, you get a very beneficial gas, CO2, because CO2 is a plant fertilizer, and without CO2, you and I wouldn't be alive today. So that is a very good part. But there's a lot of garbage you put in there, like sulfur dioxide and mercury and arsenic, and these things remain toxic for the rest of eternity. And this is why I came up with the idea of using nuclear process heat, using nuclear energy to provide the process heat, to purify coal, to convert coal to high-quality transportation fuel, and preferably diesel fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Diesel fuel, to me, is the choice of transportation fuel.
Yeah, well, you get a lot more energy out of diesel.
You get about 14 megajoules per liter of diesel fuel.
You know, now, I suppose as soon as you mention the word nuclear, everybody recoils in horror.
Everybody jumps out of windows, and because of, you know, we all know that nuclear energy is dangerous. And nuclear energy is dangerous. But think of this. We have 106 reactors in this country. They've been operating for 50 years. We've not had a single fatality in this country. And, of course, we've had the Three Mile Island grand disaster.
Nobody even caught a cold at the Three Mile Island.
Right.
And in coal mining, we have, you know, deaths almost every year.
We have. Coal mining has, by the way, improved enormously. We at one time, I went to China at one time. Of course, I owe my living to coal, mm-hmm. So I'm biased in favor of coal. But I went to China about 15 years ago, and in those days, America was averaging about 40 fatalities per year to mine about 1 billion tons of coal. China also produces a billion tons of coal, and they average about 7,000 fatalities a year.
Whew, boy. Now, you manufacture electric drives for vehicles that are safely able to be driven down there deep in those mile-deep wells and things. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about that is, you know, I used to make, when I was a boy, you know, little electric engines, motors, actually, as a hobby, and they would spark. How do you, I mean, and the last thing I would think you'd want a mile deep in a coal mine would be anything that would spark. How do you control that?
Well, you have what I call totally enclosed motors, explosion-proof motors, where you put a very strong housing around the sparking commutators.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of having explosion-proof enclosures is that if any methane leaks in, you will, of course, get an explosion inside the motor. But the enclosure has to be sufficiently strong not to rupture. So if that is strong enough not to rupture, you get a rating from a safety group called MSHA, Mine Health Safety Administration. And they tell you you can use your sparking motor underground.
I see.
But today, of course, most variable speed drives or propulsion drives use induction motors, and they don't spark.
Okay. Sir, we need to take a quick break for some commercial messages.
Okay.
When we come back, I want to talk about your work with hydrogen fuel cell drives.
Yes. I'd love to talk about that.
Folks, I'm speaking with Bong Posma, the owner of Saminco Technologies. He's right there on the cutting edge of energy use and motor drives, both electric, hydrogen, and just about everything you can think of. And this is the topic of the day these days. We'll be right back with more with Mr. Bong Posma.
This, the G-Man. This is the Jimmy Gordon Radio Show.
Chopper.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, my guest is Bob Pozwa, and he is the owner of Seminco Technologies. They make electric traction propulsion devices for coal mining industry, as well as hydrogen fuel cell drives for buses. Mr. Pozwa, on these hydrogen fuel cell things, where do you get the hydrogen?
Well, that is a very, very good point. Hydrogen, of course, is not a source of energy. It is a method of storing energy.
Right.
And today you get it from natural gas. It's called steam reforming of natural gas, where you add steam and natural gas, and you get hydrogen and carbon dioxide out of the mixture. And that is the source of hydrogen. Having said that, I've been involved with hydrogen propulsion vehicles, and I've come to the conclusion that this is a waste of time and money. It's very sexy, and it's very glamorous, but that's not the way of the future.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you on that. And your electric drives are dependent upon batteries for the most part, and I think that the fly in the ointment here is battery technology.
Battery technology. Just to give you an idea, when you have a gallon of, or say a liter of diesel fuel, you have 40 megajoules.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the same volume of a battery, you have something like 0.01 megajoules. You have about 1/1000th of the energy for the same amount of volume or mass. That's not the way to go for transportation. The future of transportation lies with hydrocarbon fuels, either gasoline or diesel fuel. And I don't care how wonderful the brochures are and what beautiful your words you say about it. The laws of physics, unfortunately, prevent you from doing anything else.
Yeah, and we have, between the United States and Canada, just enormous amounts of hydrocarbon assets.
We do. We have. If we were allowed to drill in Anwar and drill offshore in Florida, where I live, the Chinese are drilling offshore right now, and I think that if they're allowed to drill offshore Florida, they're drilling near Cuba. But we're not. And if we were to use the shale that we have 5 times as much oil in the shale we have in the Colorado as there is in Saudi Arabia. The Canadian Tarzans up in Fort McMurray, Alberta, they have 1.7 trillion barrels of reserves. To go back to this coal business, I think you asked the question about CTL, or coal liquefaction.
Yes.
I just want to give you a couple of small little principles. That is not the only way to go, but it is a good way to go, and it's an economical way to go if we were to use nuclear reactors to provide the heat for the chemical process. And what you try to do when you liquefy coal is mainly carbon.
Mm-hmm.
And fuel, gasoline, or propane, or ethane, or methane, or diesel fuel, consists of typically one carbon atom and two hydrogen atoms.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case for methane. Methane is 4 in 1. But if you get into the liquid fuel, it's approximately 2 hydrogen atoms for every carbon atom. Now, Appalachian coal in Kentucky and West Virginia only has 0.8 of a hydrogen atom. So the whole idea of liquefaction is to add 1.2 more atoms to get your ratio of 2 hydrogen atoms to 1 carbon atom. And that's liquefaction. And you use these various processes, such as the Fischer-Tropsch process invented in Germany and the Bergius process. And that's all you have to do. And it sounds simple, but of course it's very difficult to do that. But if you can attach 2 hydrogen atoms to 1 carbon atom, and then have enough of carbon atoms in one group, for example, if you have 1 carbon atom, you have gas. If you have 2, you have ethane. But if you have 8, you have octane. You have the formula for octane is C8H18, which is approximately 2 to 1. The formula for diesel is cetane, which is 16 carbon atoms in one molecule, and then you would have 34 hydrogen atoms. So the whole idea then is to this process where you can add extra hydrogen to coal, and then get the right number of atoms in the molecule.
You know, this is absolutely fascinating, Mr. Pozwa. And we're running out of time. I wonder if you can hold through another series of commercials and be with us for another segment.
I would be delighted to.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm speaking with Mr. Bon Posma, who's one of the few people, by the way, I have found who know how to pronounce the word Wehrmacht correctly.
Mr. Posma, this is Franklin, and I'm looking at the letter computer right now that comes in. We only have a few more minutes, and it's very gracious of you to come in for an additional segment in the third hour. Jeff in Grand Rapids, Michigan, writes, Dear G-Man, make sure you ask Posma this question. What is happening now with nuclear power, and what is the boots-on-the-ground perspective that Dr. or Mr. Posma has with regard to nuclear power?
Well, I'd love to talk about that.
Well, you do have a few moments if you could address that now.
Okay. Well, the known nuclear generators have been built, or the nuclear power stations have been built in the last 30 years. And because of the works of the great Jimmy Carter, he pretty well spiked nuclear energy. And one of the he passed many laws, but at the time of when Jimmy Carter was in power, there were 100 reactors being built or planned. They were all canceled after the Three Mile Island disaster.
Oh, gee. Well, you know, we've got nuclear submarines that have been operating on nuclear power plants safely for years now.
Absolutely, and incidentally, one of the persons in my in my consortium is an ex-commander of a nuclear submarine, and And by the way, we owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to Admiral Hyman Rickover.
We do indeed.
Who first built the first, or he was responsible for the Nautilus, which was the first nuclear submarine, and we owe freedom and nuclear technology to this great man.
Yes, indeed. My guest is Bon Posma, and he has been kind enough to say that he will stay with us. Right after the news, we'll be right back with him. He is probably the most knowledgeable person on these fuel conversions.